Plan today is to review two, I think, separate but connected topics. The first one is, if you remember back in the beginning of the year when we were doing introductory shiurim toward Shemitah, I presented a shiur about the relationship between declaring the land ownerless and all the other areas of Shemitah, so I want to review that. And also the recent shiurim we had on the Melachot and Isurim related to the prohibition against or from working the land for tree purposes, tree maintenance during Shemitah. Let's get to it. Let me start by asking you. So, when I ask you about declaring the land ownerless during Shemitah, right? So, where do we get that notion?
Rabbi Torchainerson.
Where is the notion of declaring land ownerless during Shemitah come from?
Meaning from... One second.
Say, Chaim, where does it come from? How do you know? Is that something you have to do? Do you have to declare the land is ownerless during Shemitah?
It's based on how you translate Shemitah.
Well, it's the way the Rambam understands it, it's a pasuk, right? That's what you
accept. Tishmetana, right?
Exactly. It says in the Torah, Vashviyei tishmiteno nitashtas. So the way the Rambam, based on the Sifri, explains that, is that it means that you have to declare that your land, the land is ownerless. Okay? Tishmiteno unitashta. He says a mitzvah is to shesivon lahafkir kol ma shetatzmiach ha'aretz b'shnat hashmishka v'hifkir tzimcher matinu klam l'chol adam. That we have to declare ownerless all the produce of the land during Shemitah and everything that the land produces to all people. So at first glance, you'll tell me, okay, so that's a mitzvah, but that doesn't, it's just one mitzvah of many, right? We have many mitzvah we can and can't do during Shemitah. We, you know, can't work the land, we declare the land ownerless, we have a mitzvah of bior, ridding the produce from our fields, as we'll get to. So, okay, maybe it's just like all the other ones. I'm going to argue that that's not so. It's actually a very fundamental mitzvah that defines all the mitzvot. So we begin with the Isur of Ketzira. So it says in the Torah, in Parshat Bahar, that Tzviach Ketzircha lo Tziksor. With leaving that the word Tzviach, there is a prohibition against harvesting during the Shemitah year. Now at first glance, that means you can't harvest anything during the Shemitah year. But that is not so. In fact, you can harvest during Shemitah year. How do I know that? How do I know that you can harvest during the Shemitah year?
Korban Omer, or it doesn't count?
Korban Omer, okay. It's an interesting one. That's like a whole discussion. You guys, simpler. How do I know that I can harvest during the Shemitah year?
You're told to eat the fruits of the land.
The pasuk doesn't mention.
Chaim, who is disguised in a tunnel here, says that you're told you can eat. What are you going to eat if you can't harvest? Okay, that's one answer. Good. Anything else? Any other? We'll get to it later. That's a simple explanation.
Chari Shiva Katsir Tishbos. It doesn't mention.
Chari Shiva Katsir Tishbos sounds like you cannot harvest the land during Shemitah, but we know that you can, actually. It's not true. You can harvest land during Shemitah. It just has to be in a certain way. So Chaim points out the simple explanation, which is that it says that you can't. You have to eat. You're allowed to eat during Shemitah. Well, if you can't work the land, then what are you eating? So the truth is that it must be that you can harvest. And this is what the Sifra says here. If you look at your review sheet, I see, is that just Zev and Mickey? Do you have it? Do you have the review sheet? Beautiful. Okay. So the Sifra says that you can indeed harvest your field during Shemitah, but there are two different qualifications. Number one, it says, Mina shamor ba'aretz ena tzabotzer, al tzabotzer mina mufkar. You can only harvest from that which is mufkar, free, ownerless, open to the public. You cannot harvest from that which is shamor, which is guarded. So condition number one, you have to allow, you cannot guard your produce during Shemitah. You can only harvest from it if it is not guarded. Number two, it also says, lo sid sorg, lo kid sorg, kiderech ha-botzrin. You cannot harvest in the normal way. right? And the Sifra actually tells you what you should do. They said, you have to actually change the implement that you use to harvest produce during Shemitah, right? You can't use the normal sickle. You got to change that. Okay, well, that's kind of interesting. So you can harvest. Now the question is, but do you have these two qualifications? Well, why do we have these qualifications? What would be the idea of not harvesting during the normal way? And what would be the idea of not harvest or not guarding your produce?
Demonstrate spyless.
Ah, so very good. And this, by the way, is the other reason to suggest that we know that you can harvest, because it actually says you cannot cut your harvest. The indication being that the purpose of not harvesting is not harvesting it in a way that demonstrates that you are the owner of the produce. But if you do it in a way that does not assert your ownership over the produce, then it may indeed be permissible. How exactly does this work? So it's very complicated, actually, and maybe we'll get to it in more detail in the year. There are a number of shittos in the Rishon. If you look in your source sheet, I have outlined them for you. The most strict is Tosfos, and I think he really highlights this. Tosfos actually says it is so important to demonstrate that you do not own the produce during Shemitah that if you indeed do guard your produce, if it is Shamor at the start of Shemitah, you can't eat from it at all. That guarding your produce during Shemitah actually creates a biblical prohibition against consuming it. And if you did guard it, it is forbidden to you. And even if you don't guard it and you do leave it open to the public, you still can't harvest it in the normal way. You have to, either way, harvest it in an abnormal way with a shinoi. That's the view of Tosfos, which is that there's a bona fide biblical prohibition against consuming produce that was not mufkar, not declared ownerless appropriately. However, Rashi and the Ramban take it a step down. They basically say when it says you can't harvest from the shamor, it doesn't mean you can't harvest from it at all. It means that you cannot harvest until you then go and declare it ownerless. So that if you guard and build a fence around your produce during Shemitah, right, you have violated a prohibition. And until you rectify it by then declaring it ownerless and opening it to the public, you can't consume it. And the Rosh actually says it's so contingent upon ownership that, in fact, if you do the right thing, it's almost the flip side of Tosos. If you do declare that your produce is ownerless, you can do whatever you want at that point. You've already accomplished the job. Since it's accessible to everyone, you can even harvest it. Normally, the requirement to do a shinoi is only limited to the case where you already prevented others from accessing the produce. In that case, you have to then go and make and demonstrate that you're doing it differently because it's the Shemitah year. And finally, we have the Rambam, who doesn't mention any difference between that which is Shamor and Mufkar. All he mentions is the way that you harvest it. But as we'll see, the Rambam elaborates upon this, right? And Tano, what does the Rambam say? How do you harvest during Shemitah? How do you do kotzer? What can't you do?
Kederach kotzerim.
Which means?
The normal way of harvesting, which was putting in piles and putting it in and threshing it.
Exactly, threshing, piling. So the Rambam has an expansive view of the things you can't do while actually in the act of harvesting. For the Rambam, it's not just that you have to change your implement, but you can't. It relates to how much you harvest. It relates to the other acts that are normally associated with harvesting as well. You can't thresh it. You can't do ma'amer. You can't pile it up in the field. That all has to do with the limitations on harvesting. So Shaul Yisraeli in Eretz Chanda argues that for the Rambam, Mina Shamor Iatabotzer is simply, again, it's not about the type of produce, but it's all about the way that you relate to the harvesting. That again, this prohibition against Sira is targeted toward demonstrating that you are not asserting ownership over the produce. And that the way that you do that, according to the Rambam, is by doing it as an ani would do it, as someone who is not really the owner of the produce, but who's gathering it a bit at a time. And therefore, you don't pile it up. You don't get the whole thing at once. You don't use the normal implement, right? So that's the way the Rambam relates to it. The point is clearly then, so what we said is there's an isra of hefker, there's a requirement to be mafker produce. And also, clearly, I think, and how the specifics vary, but clearly the prohibition against sirah is not a prohibition in and of itself, but is rather a prohibition of harvesting in a way which asserts your ownership over the produce. Now, many mafarshim, and Achron would stop there, and they'd say, look, so now we can distinguish between sirah and the other forms of malacha. Sirah, as we've said, and Richard Tiner mentioned, is targeted toward the fruits, the produce. That is a question of doing it in a way where you don't assert your ownership, but harisha, plowing, or, you know, zomer, as we'll get to, the other malachot are just prohibitions in and of themselves. So that is indeed for Shlomo Zalman, and many achronim would draw the line, but it even goes further than that. So the next thing to discuss, which we did discuss, was the mitzvah of Shvitat Ha'aretz, right? So there's a discussion in the Achronim, which is very relevant and important, which is there a prohibition against causing the land to produce during Shemitah? Meaning, even if you aren't the one doing the work, right? If someone else works for you or does work on your land, is that your problem? This comes down to the way you interpret a Gemara in Avodah Zarah. Because the Gemara in Avodah Zarah says that Adam mitzuve ashvitat. I'm forgetting the exact lashon here, but Adam mitzuve ashvitat sadehu. That on Shvius we are commanded regarding the resting of our land. What does it mean we're regarded? We have to cause our land to rest. So Tosfot there sort of plays it down. Tosfot says that what it means is that you have to worry about selling another person your land who's Jewish because they are commanded not to work the land. As opposed to on Shabbos where there's no specific association with the land, so that's how he learns it. But the Tosfot Rid argues that no, it's like Shvisas Kalim for Beis Shammai. It's that you are liable for the productivity of your land in and of itself. It's not only a prohibition of for you to work, but it's also a problem if your land produces. Now, obviously, that can't just mean that if flowers sprout out by themselves, that's your problem. You have to have some sort of connection to it. But if you ask someone to work the land for you during Shemitah, it's not just a mira menachri or even, you know, it's a shlichas dvar avera. It's your problem because it's your land. You are required to prevent your land from working, at least not to cause your land to do avodah. Now, if the prohibition was against the work of the land in and of itself, then that would probably be pretty broad. However, Rav Shauli Israeli, again, this piece points out that there seem to be some exceptions to this. One of them, I'll point out two. One of them is the well-known heter of Shluchei Basin working in Sada Hefker, right? So on the one hand, you're causing a land. So you could limit this to the owner themselves, but you're causing the land to produce, number one. Number two, there is a Yerushalmi which allows a person to train their ox in plowing during Shemitah. That if your intention isn't to plow, but what you're really interested in doing is training your animal in the avodah plowing, then that is okay. And the question is, why? Right? Why should that be? Again, ultimately, the land, if there is a prohibition, number one, you could say it's just regular plowing, but even if not, ultimately, the land will still reap the harvest or reap the produce of that plowing, right? You're still working it. Who cares why you're doing it? This isn't Shabbos where it's Malacha Shein Tzriach L'Gufa. So why should it matter? If Shaul Yisraeli argues that no, when we say there's a mitzvah of Shvitat Ha'aretz, it's not Shvitat Ha'aretz in Malacha, but Shvitat Ha'aretz in Ba'alut Ha'adam. The land rests from your ownership of it. That's the Shvitah during Shvius. And this is actually Ibn Ezra's explanation of Shabbat Shabbaton Yel Aretz, is that during Shemitah we don't work because God owns the land. So it's about the ownership of it. If you, for certainly what he argues is that if Beit Din works the land during Shemitah, but it's not their land and they're doing it for as shlichim for the kahal, that's certainly not starting any ba'alut over it. They're not saying they own it. They're not doing it for themselves. It's not even their land. And furthermore, he also argues that if you have you're training an animal during Shemitah, so that the focus isn't at all the work at all. The work is you could care less about. What you're really focused in on is training the animal. So that doesn't assert your ownership over the land. It asserts your ownership over the animal, maybe. But the animal isn't also during Shemitah. The karka is, right? So that's why it's okay. He actually says, and this relates to Natana's Chazar Shirin, but this, and which is also how Rishon Lezalman explained it, this is why the Rambam forbids doing Ketzira L'Avodah Aretz. He doesn't mention the heter, the dispensation to do it slowly and a little bit at a time. The reason is because when you harvest for the sake of the land, so that is a demonstration of ownership. It's Kederach Bailin, and therefore it is prohibited. So that's the first thing I wanted to sort of, we talked also about Kedusha Shvius, and that might relate to this, but that's the first topic at hand. And I think this is a very important idea. Whenever you learn anything in Shemitah, you have to sort of always wonder, how much is the Malacha a prohibition in and of itself, and how much is it really about relinquishing our ownership over the land and over the produce? That's topic number one. Questions or comments? Everyone's good? Beautiful. Amazing. Okay. Moving on to Avodat Ha'ilan. So, as we've discussed at length, the Torah mentions explicitly in Parsha Behar, four different things that you can't do, right? You can't do Botzer, Kotzer, Zomer, and Zorea, right? You can't sow, you can't prune, and you can't plow or harvest, or you can't harvest or from trees or from the land. One thing it doesn't mention is planting trees, right? Usually in the Torah, or in Chazal, in the Torah, when we refer to planting trees, we don't use the term zorea, we use the term notea. Nitiot, notea means to plant trees. While it says in the Torah that you're not allowed to prune trees during Shemitah, it never mentions that you cannot plant trees to begin with. Now, that in and of itself shouldn't necessarily mean that it's okay to plant trees, because we could have said, well, if pruning is prohibited, then probably planting is going to be prohibited. What's the difference between trees and plants? But there's a problem with that. There is an indication that notea is indeed not deraita. What is that? Why would I assume, based on the Gemara, that notea may be derabanan? What Gemara have we seen over and over and over again, which might limit the prohibition of notea?
Avodah sarachmana toladodah sarachmana.
Right, so the Gemara Moed Katzan, says Natana, Gimel Amud Aleph, says, sounds like that the only prohibition that's deoraita during Shemitah are the four that are listed in the Torah. Notea is not listed in the Torah, right? So, and the Rambam, indeed, if you look in the Rambam sounds like it is just a rabbinic prohibition. It is not an iser deoraita. However, there's two problems with that, which we'll get to, right? There's a textual problem and there's a svara problem. Let's focus on the svara problem at first, right? So in order to properly understand the malacha of notea and its relationship to zorea and zomer, it's worth going back to the malacha of Shabbos, right? Because Shabbos is often the most extensive treatment of any of the malacha. And indeed, the Gemara in Shabbos does discuss the prohibition of zorea and notea in various other forms. The question is, what is the relationship with zorea and notea? So, in Shabbos in general, there are three categories, I'd say, or three ways to classify a malacha, right? So there are 39 malachot that are the primary avodah, I'd say, right? That there are 39 forms of labor that are the most primary forms of malacha that are forbidden on Shabbos. The second category are that there are certain activities which are so similar to those, even though you might say they're not exactly the same, but they're similar enough that they also count as a primary category, an av. Anybody have an example of that? What would be an example of something that's a bit different but still qualifies as an av malacha? In Shabbos?
Noteya to Zareya.
Well, come on, Alex. That's exactly the, that's not clear. That's what I have to get to. You can't say Noteya and Zareya. What else, though? This one everyone will agree to. So one example might be Ofa and Bishel. Right? Ofa and Bishel. So on a simple level, what happened in the Mishkan? Ofa or Mevashel?
Mevashel.
Right. It's Bishel Samimonim. So Bishel is really what happened in the Mishkan. However, the Mishnah counts Ofa. And the simple explanation is that they're essentially the same. They're, either way, you're preparing food with fire, and that's what you're doing. Whether or not there's water involved, okay, so that's some details, but they're both considered avot. And finally, the last category is the category of toldot, subcategories. Not one of the 39, not similar, connected enough to the 39 to be one of the avot, but they're still similar enough to be biblically prohibited and therefore to be asur midioraita. So, when it comes to Shabbos, and Alex, since you mentioned this, I have to bother you about it. Zoreya and Oteya, avot, toldot, what do you think? Or what do we know?
So the Gemara says they're both avos. It just depends what you call it.
Does the Gemara see that explicitly? Why do you think, where does the Gemara say that? Where does the Gemara actually say? Anyone remember? Or why? I think, so Alex is not, give me Alex a hard time here, but Alex is not wrong. And that is a simple way to read the Gemara. I just don't think it's obviously, and in fact, not everyone says it.
Well, it's,
so you just mute yourself, Alex.
It includes others. Markiv, Mavrich, it basically groups them all.
It groups them all together. Yeah. It says, Kula right. Malacha Achadhin. Okay. Right. The Gemara in Shabbos mentions five things. Noteya and Zoreya, Zomer, Mavrich, Markiv. Noteya and Zoreya are planting, sowing plants, planting trees. Mavrich and Markiv are two types of grafting. And finally, you have Zomer, which is pruning. Those are all Malacha Achad. Those are all one Malacha. However, the Gemara also says that some things are high of Mishum Zoreya, and some things are high of Mishum Noteya. So how do you look at this? If you remember, and you can take a look back at the heading under here, Zoreya b'Shabbat, and the Shorshi Mahin Avot Mahin Toldot, the Rambam says they're all Avot, which makes sense, right? They're all primarily about what? All five are primarily about what's the goal?
Making stuff grow.
Making stuff grow. It's all making stuff grow. Stop telling, okay, grafting, planting trees, plants, pruning. It's all making stuff grow. And I get that. I'm fine with that. Rashi kicks out Zomer. Zomer is the only tolada, right? Why is Zomer a bit different? That I also understand. Zomer is not directly contributing to plant growth. It's removing an impediment, right? It's taking off. We'll get to exactly what and how and wet and dry. But it's taking off part of the tree, which is inhibiting plant growth to make the tree go better. So that's not an ah, but it's still a tolada. It's close enough to the idea that it should be midiraita. However, then you have Noteya, the shita of the Ritva, b'shem hara'ah, from Shabbos on Gimel of Days, who says that Noteya and Zoreya are avot, and the rest are toldot. Again, I get that, because those are the ones which directly relate to planting. And finally, I have Rabbeinu Hananel, who is, I guess, a purist. And Rabbeinu Hananel tells us, you know, for all the grandparents in the audience, this one's for you. Rabbeinu Hananel says that on Shabbos, we have parents, we have children, and we have grandchildren. What exactly this means, I am not 100% sure. He says Zoreya is the Av, right? That's the parent. Noteya is a Tolada. That's the child. And then Zomer is a grandchild. It is a Vlad Vladot. It is the child of Zomer. So only Zorea is the Av. Now, this is very important for Shemitah purposes. Going back to the world of Shemitah, we have to consider the following. As Netan Alsen Moikatan Gimel Amid Aleph, the Gemara says that the only Toladot which the Torah prohibited are Botzer and Zomer. Now, so whether Noteah should be derived on a conceptual level should depend on how you characterize it. If you say that Noteah and Zoreah are literally one and the same, then certainly you would think it should be Deoraita. It's not like just similar enough to Zoreah. It's literally the same. You can't discern between them. That would be one opinion. Another option would be that it's still an Av. It's not a Tolada, but it's an Av, like most Mefarshim and Shabbos. Then it would depend on how you read the Gemara in Moed Katan. Because the Gemara in Moed Katan says, Toladot are not Deoraita. What about other Avot that are not mentioned in Torah? What do we think about that? What if it's I have an Av Malacha that's an Av of one of the big four mentioned in Bahar, but it's not mentioned explicitly. Is that Deoraita?
Kal v'chomer.
So Kal v'chomer is a good point, but it's not so, but the Rambam sounds like, from the Rambam it sounds like no. The Rambam sounds like it's not just Toladot and Avot, it's only biblically prohibitive, it's in the Torah. So this gets complicated. So now we have a problem. Because, again, the Rambam sounds like it's Derabanan, as I mentioned for you in the Ten of Tehav Shvi'it. There's a textual problem with the Rambam and a conceptual problem with the Rambam. The conceptual problem is, as Rechaim just said, it's a Kal v'chomer. It makes no sense to say that pruning, Zomer, is a biblical prohibition, but planting the tree to begin with is not. Right? Once you plant the tree, you prune it to help it grow better. But planting the tree itself is going to be Darabanan? That makes no sense. That's one issue that Mishonim and Mefarshim raised. The other issue is that we have a Gemara. The Gemara in Gittin says explicitly that Noteah is Deoraita during Shemitah. So now what do we do about that? It's also, like, you could argue it's a contradiction. So how do we solve this? There is the opinion of Rabbi Tam, and maybe the simple explanation of the Rambam, who say it's Darabanan. At least the way the Rosh understood the Rabbi Tam. That it is Derabanan, and the reason for that would be that it is not written in the Torah. We'll have to get back to how you defend the Gemara and get in how you relate to the Kal v'chomer question. But if it is Deoraita, how could it be Deoraita if it's not in the Torah? So here you have a few different approaches, okay? So the Rosh sounds like it's like, he says, if it's like a Kal v'chomer, it's a kol shekein that the tree is that Noteah is prohibited, is almost prohibited. So how do you look at this? I think you have two options, really, here. The simple, on the one hand, you could say that it's an Av. That's his point. It's an Av Malacha, and anything that's an Av on Shabbos is also going to be an Av on Shemitah. The Gemara says that only the Toldot written in the Torah are prohibited. It meant Toldot specifically, but all Avot Malachot relating to the four mentioned in the Torah are all Aser mi deoraita. So all the avot of Kotzer, all the avot of Zoreah, those are all mi deoraita. That would have a big nafkin, you know, also. If you really held like that's the interpretation of the Rosh, because then you could say Mavrich and Markiv also should be mi deoraita. Right? Because those are also avot. Another explanation you could suggest is that the Rosh isn't just saying that it's an Av, but maybe he's saying, this is what Mari Kirkus explains on the Rambam in Hilchot Shemitah Yovel, Parak Aleph, that Noteah is the same as Zoreah. It's the same exact thing. It's not just a primary category of the greater category of Zoreah. It's the same exact act. It's like Bishul and Ofed, right? So, therefore, if Zoreah is Usher, it has to be Usher. And this ends up being an argument among the Mefarshim, how you explain this, Chazon Ish, which we got to in a second, says that it's a Kal v'chomer from Zomer, but Rosh Shlomo Zalman and the Egel Tal, I believe, or actually the Shlomo Zalman and Marie Kirkus, I just said, both think that even though the Rosh says a Kal v'chomer from Zomer, what he really means is it's Zoreah. Noteah is Zoreah. When the Torah writes Zoreah, that also includes Noteah. That, okay, so that deals with the opinion, let's say, of the Rosh in Shavias, Aleph Aleph and Beis Bug, that Noteah is an Isser Mi Deoraita. how do we solve the Rambam? So first is the conceptual question. Why wouldn't noteia be midioraita? So a few things to say here. First, we have the Egli Tal. I like the Egli Tal's explanation a lot. Number one, he says that, it's interesting, he says that noteia and shvius is different. He's actually dealing with why for the Rambam, though in his conception, noteia is an av on Shabbos, but a tolada on shvius, and therefore not deraita. His answer is that noteia deals with the tree, and the tree itself does not have kedushat shvius. It doesn't have kedusha. So the only issue on shvius are the fruits of the tree and the produce, and that's indirect. That's indirect. It's different than planting, in that planting directly relates to the produce, which has kedusha shvius, whereas planting a tree is a step removed. You plant the tree produce, you know, grows fruit. And that's why it's step removed. I'll also add, there are those that say, and I think this actually might relate to the Bialim part of it, but since there is a prohibition against arla, so you don't even get the fruits of the tree the first year if you plant during Shemitah. And that's why it can't be Diorita. But he also, he says that just generally, we may have to limit the prohibitions in Shemitah to what are exactly seen in the Torah because we don't have Melechem HaShavet. What allows us to branch out on Shabbos and say, it's Zoreya, Mavrich, Markiv, Noteya, Zomer, they're all Diorita, is the concept of Melechem HaShavet, Asra Torah. And it's about your thought process and your goal. What were you trying to accomplish? I was trying to accomplish plant growth. Then it's all the same. On Shemitah, as we'll get to in a bit, during Shemitah, there is no Melachah Machshev, at least according to Tosfos. So it's not about your thought process as much as about what did you actually do. And in terms of the action that you're doing, there is a bit of a difference between Noteah and Zoreah, and therefore the Rambam thinks they are, Noteah is Derabbanon and Zoreah is Deoraita. How do we deal with the Gemara and Gittin? The Michas Chinuch actually suggests, well, maybe the Gemara in Ginnin, which says that Noteah is the Araisa, is according to the opinion that thinks all told about the Araisa. If you go back to the Gemara in Moed Katzal and Gimel and Aleph, it's actually a Machloket. Abaye says, really all the told about are the Araisa. Why is it that you can water your field during Shemitah? It's Shemitah b'zman hazeh derabanan, right? And that relates to Rav Alex's Shir on Wednesday. And Rav is the one that says, no, told about the Asar Achmana. So maybe the Gemara in Ginnin refers to that. It's not the best answer. That's the truth. So others, like Rav Cook, and this will lead to our next topic, Rav Cook argues that the difference, okay, actually, taking a step back, the Chazonish says, really, everybody agrees it's Deoraita. Everybody agrees it's Deoraita. The Rambam thinks Deoraita. The Rabbeinu Tam also, parenthetically, never says explicitly that it's not Deoraita. He just says during Tosefet Shviit, it's not Deoraita. So everybody thinks Deoraita. Why does the Rambam not give you lashes in Onshin Min Adin? It's a Kavah Chomer. We learn out Noteya from Zomer. If Zomer, which is just pruning, is Asur Midoraita, Kavah Chomer, Noteya is Asur Midoraita. Well, you can't punish someone when you learn the din from a Kavah Chomer, and therefore the Rambam says you don't get lashes. And parenthetically, the Aruch HaShulchan, according to Aruch HaShulchan, you can argue, the Rambam thinks it's Midoraita, there's no law. It's part of the assay of Shvitat Ha'aretz. Okay. However, of Cook argues that it depends on how you plant the tree. And he distinguishes between planting a tree with a seed, a fruit seed, and planting a tree with a sapling, right? But there are different ways we plant trees. Usually you go to the nursery and you buy a small little sapling and then you put that back in the ground. You transplant. That's what usually happens. So that is not Deoraita, says Rav Cook. Because that's not Zoreya. It's Noteya. And it doesn't say Noteya in the Torah, according to the Rambam. But if you do Zoreya, if you take the seed of a fruit and plant that in the ground, that is Deoraita, because that is Bechlal Lo Sizra. And when the Gemara in Gittin says that it's Deoraita, it means when you do it via a seed. Which relates to another important question. Is Rav Cook right about this? Should we focus essentially on your method of planting or on the outcome of your planting? We talk about Zoreya Noteya. Is the focus on the Maisa of Zoreya or is it on the Toksa of the plant growing? So this, we discussed, really depends on the area of Malacha, Halacha that you're talking about. Just in terms of other areas of Halacha, in Arla, The halal laws of Orla, meaning that the first few years of the tree's life, the produce is prohibited. We do not distinguish between how you plant the tree. Right? It says, Kol Eitz says that, the Sifra has a drasha, but the term Kol Eitz Machal, it doesn't matter whether it's transplanting, using a seed, or using a sapling. It's all Arla, it's all an Eitz. Right? So that would seem to say that we should not distinguish. It's all Moteya. Doesn't matter. However, and I'm not including all the marmakomos here, but, you know, just generally, broad strokes, in Halacha of Kayim, it seems that we do distinguish, such that we say, Zerei Eitzim are not Kruyin Zra'im. Zerei Ilan ain't Kruyin Zra'im, says Yerushalmi. The Zera of an Ilan is not considered a Zera in this regard. And indeed, unless we're talking about a Karen, the grapevine, the only type of klayim that there is grafting trees together. You are allowed to, you are allowed to plant a tree near another type of plant that is not klayim. Zari ilan enan kruyin zra'im. And when it says lo sizra, it does not refer to the seed of a fruit, the seed of a fruit tree. So we have different implications from other parts of halacha. What about in Shemitah? So the prevailing opinion, and then yes, you have the Michal Chino says this, or Cook says in Shabbat Arta, just said, he goes back and forth, Yechil Michal Tukachinsky says in Sefer HaShemitah, it doesn't make a difference what you do, it's all Zoreya. Planting a tree via fruit seed is an Aser Midior, right? Because it is Bechlal Zoreya. However, the Chazon Ish argues no. Zari Ilan and Kriyin Zra'im, based on Yerushalmi. It's not Zera if you're planting a tree. He focuses on the outcome of the process, and therefore he says that if you think that Noteya is a Rabbanon, it doesn't matter how you plant the tree, it will still be Midrabbanon. So that relates to the idea of Noteya. Finally, the last thing we'll cover regarding Noteya is, so we talked about, and this again relates to the question, are we focused on the process of planting or the outcome of planting? It relates to the question of, what if you plant a tree right before Shemitah, but it only takes root during Shemitah? Number one, is that an Asur Midiraisa? And the second very, maybe more pertinent question, Halach L'maaseh, what about nowadays? So, back in the time of the, you know, Beis HaMikdash, we had something called Tosefet Shviit, which means that you cannot do Malacha even before Shemitah starts. So let's say for our purposes, at least the month before Shemitah starts. So, during those times, the Mishnah in Shemitah says you are not allowed to plant within 30 days of Shemitah. But what about nowadays? Nowadays, we no longer have Tosefet Shviit. That's what we paskin. So is it prohibited to plant a tree immediately before Shemitah, right before Rosh Hashanah? Is that okay nowadays? Okay, so what do we know? Any thoughts? Simple explanation. Mutter or Aser? Planting right before Shemitah.
If you don't consider it it's a question whether you consider the 3 days, 2 weeks, 30 days in
the Tosef
as there.
It's mutter, it's not shvius yet.
Okay, so the simple explanation I think is that it's aser, based on the sources. Why do I say that? Because the Gemara in Shemitah, whether it's through Rabbanan or Deraita, the simple explanation based on all the Rishonim. So let's take a step back for a second, actually. So there is an argument in the Rishonim whether when there was Tosefet Shviit, is there a problem to plant, let's say, 45 days before Shemitah? Meaning, the 30 days before Shemitah is considered Tosefet Shviit. What if I plant right before Tosefet Shviit such that the tree takes root during Tosefet Shviit? That is a big discussion in the Rishonim. Rashi says it's Midoraita. Toso says it's totally fine. And the Ramban and the Ran and others say it's Derabanan. Fine. That's all well and good. But they all seem to agree that there is a problem to plant a tree such that will only take root during Shemitah. Even Tosfot himself, who's the more lenient opinion in this regard, argues that it's a problem doing it during Shemitah. So based on the sources, you would have thought it should be Asur. And the Torah source Rid says this most emphatically in Moikadon. If you look in the source sheet under number 5 by that Torah source Rid, Im tiklo mikodem lakim v'kolei b'shemo tiklo mikodem lakolei b'shviyit ha'vilei ki'ilu nata b'toch shana shviyit v'ya'akor. If it doesn't take root until Shemitah, it is as if you had planted it during Shemitah and you have to uproot it. So why would this be? This would be an extension of the concept of Shvitat Ha'aretz. If there is a prohibition not just against planting, but doing an action which causes the land to produce during Shemitah, then it might even be prohibited to plant right before Shemitah, such that the plant takes root during Shemitah. So in this regard, you have Rosh Shlomo Zalman against the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish unbelievably says it is mutter. This is in at least in Chaf Beis. First he says, I don't know, maybe it's the Rabbanon. Then he says in Chaf Beis, hey, es ein eser bizman hazeh, nera dechemen lo nisgar begemara poskim lasar ein lanu l'chash yisurim. Wow, Chazon Ish says, don't make up prohibitions. You never saw anywhere that it's you can't plant right before Shemitah nowadays. It's permissible. We don't have to have Shviyat. Go for it. However, Shlomo Zalman says that's nice, but it's against every single Rishon and Mefarish on the Gemara and all the Poskim. I don't understand. I mean, the Gemara says pretty clearly you can't, and all the Mefarishim say it's a problem. The only thing that's not a problem is Seven Shviyat. So he says, I would have agreed with the Chazon Ish, but I just don't know what he's talking about. So that is actually a machlokas amongst the postgame. I imagine that, you know, at least if you're going to plant, make sure that it takes root before Shemitah. That's the bottom line, which I think would mean 2 weeks from what I understand, for at least for tree purposes. Okay, so much for the Isser of Motea. We move on to the Isser of Zomer. And the big question, Zomer means pruning. Generally, we prune by removing parts of the tree Zomer classically referred to the vine, the part of the plant. If you don't remove them, they don't grow nicely, they lose nutrients, sometimes there'll be decayed parts of the plant that you have to remove. There are all sorts of reasons why pruning is necessary, as we discussed a few weeks ago. So pruning is very important. But what constitutes the Isser Medioraita of Zomer? Right? So this gets a bit complicated because we have our favorite Gemara in Gimel Amud Aleph, which says all the Avodah Derabanan and all the Toldot Derabanan, and including those Toldot are a whole bunch of words which sound different but seem like they're all saying the same thing. And I remember some of them. What are our synonyms of Zimor? What are the other words?
Bolded ones. Karasmim, Zadrin.
Good, Kirsum, Zeroid, Pisug, Mifarig, they're all have to do with taking stuff off trees so the tree grows better. Why are they Derabanan? Pray tell. I don't understand. The first approach is Rashi. Rashi says it's only Zomer if you're doing it to the grapevine. Literally, Kirsum and Zimor are the exact same thing. Zimor is the Oraita because it's the Kerem. Kirsum is Midrabanan because it's just a normal tree. That's it. That's what Rashi says. Why that should be, we'll get to in just a bit. However, the issue is for the Rambam. The Rambam doesn't explain like that because the Rambam says on a simple level, although some Mefarshim try to play this down, I don't find it very convincing. Echad ha-kerem ve-echad shar ilanot. It is the same between the vine and the tree. So that doesn't seem like it's a good answer for the Rambam. How can we answer? So the Egle Tal says that it all depends on what you call it. It's dependent on the shem. And these can both be explanations for Rashi and for the Rambam, that it really just depends on the term you use. It is Zomer if people generally call it Zomer, and people generally only refer to pruning grapevines as Zomer, and that's the only thing that's Midioraita. And it even includes harvesting in this. If you look in Chazal, there are all sorts of terms for harvesting. There's a different term for the olive tree, different term for figs, different term for vines, different term for regular fruit trees. And that makes a difference, as the Egle Tal, if you don't call it kotzer or gotzer, it's not deoraita. If it's mosaic, whatever it is, hitoth, that is not deoraita. Unbelievable. That's what he says. It depends on the name. Interesting. Rev Rimon, so the Chazon Ish, explaining the Rambam, says something a bit different. He says it's not just about the vine and just the type of thing that you're doing. The point is that they're a little bit different. The act itself is a little different. You do it a little bit differently when it's the vine. So there is a slight difference in what you're doing. I might not understand that. But Rev Rimon sort of embellishes upon the Chazon Ish. I think he actually attaches this to the Chazon Ish, but I am not sure that that's really what the Chazon Ish is saying. But Rav Rimon says it's actually fundamentally different, meaning when you prune a vine, it's not simply removing an impediment. You actually dictate how much produce, how many grapes the vine is going to grow that year. It's a very fundamental part of the growth process, right? Zehu leman harbota perot banafim nisharim. You specifically leave some of the grapes and cut the rest off. And by the way, that's important. One of the ways to explain this is that zomer is only when you cut some off and leave some as well. Because by doing that, you are determining how much the vine is going to produce that year. So it plays a very fundamental part of the process. Whereas zomer of a tree is not as fundamental. It's just getting rid of impediments. That's how Rabbi Rimon says it. And Cook says something similar. However, just to point out, and again, I'm not sure how this works, the actual source is, Yechiel Michal Tekochinski sounds like it all is zomer. It's all deoraita, right? His lashon is, kol ha-kotze tanafo yichor me'ezet ilon chuyay deze mikadel mitabel ilon. That's all zomer. You cut off a branch or any part of the tree so that it grows better, which I think makes a lot of sense logically and conceptually, but it's just against the Gemara. He sort of quotes the Gemara in Moe Katlin, which says that all of these things are to Rabbanon except for zomer proper. Yeah, I just didn't really understand how he answered that Gemara, but that's just another idea there. So the point is that zomer is a specific type of pruning, and we'll actually embellish upon this in right now when we talk about the last issue with zomer, which is Kavana, right? One question discussed in the Farshim is, when you prune, are you only in violation of the Isur of Zomer if the purpose of removing the branch is in order to help the tree grow better? Or is it even a problem if you want the branch itself, right? And so if I wanted to remove a branch for another reason, but I could care less about the tree, would that be a problem during Shemitah? On a simple level, the answer is no. How do I know it shouldn't be a problem? What do we learn? What source do we learn which indicates that it is okay to remove a branch from a tree on Shemitah, during Shemitah, if the purpose of doing so is for the branch itself? Don't remember? What case do we have?
Ketircha, Ketircha Kotrim.
No, it's a case. This is your case, Tom. This is your case, Chaim. Remember? Hanukkah? I'll press.
Oh, right, yeah. This is when you get the vine to tie down the...
Yes, exactly.
To tie up your olives. Yeah, exactly. It's weird.
So Gemara and Gideon is talking about the case right, where Rish Lakish was accompanying some of his rabbinic mentors on a journey to learn how to be Ma'aber the Shana. Sounds like great Shemesh. On his way, it was during Shemitah year, and he saw people working the land, horrible. And one of them was doing zomer of a keren. He was pruning a vine, and Rish Lakish says, "What's going on with this guy?" And the rabbi said, "Rish Lakish, come down. Maybe he needed it for his olive press. Maybe that's why he was cutting off the vine." Wait. Either way, he's cutting off the vine, right? Should it make a difference why he's cutting off the vine? Well, the Meiri says, yes, indeed it does, because you're only in violation of Zomer if you do it with Kavanat Zimor. But if you're intending to take the vine and not to help the part which is still connected, grow better, then that's not Zimor. In fact, it's Mutter, permitted. That is what the Iri says on that Gemara. However, Tosfot in Shabbos is very bothered by this, because the Gemara in Shabbos says, Zomer v'tzarech le'etzim chayev shtayin. If you prune a tree on Shabbos and you need the firewood, you are liable for two different malachot. You are liable for kotzer, because you cut down the firewood, and you're liable for zomer, because you pruned the tree. Asks Tosfot, I don't get it. If you're even liable when you need the firewood, why in the Gemara and Ginnin does it sound like it was okay for the guy to remove that part of the vine because he needed it for his olive press? Who cares? You're still liable for both Zomer and Kotzer. That is the question of Tosfot. Anybody remember any of his answers? There's two Tosfot's this is. One in Sanhedrin and one in Shabbos. What is his answer? What might you answer? Let's put it that way, based on what we just said. How might you solve this problem? Based on the Meiri.
This is in Mazik S8.
So that's Tosfot. Tosfot says, really, you're right. It doesn't make a difference whether or not have you Kavana Zimor. It's always a problem, even if your Kavana is Le'etzim. However, you have to do, in that case, you did it in a way where you damaged the plant. You damage the plant. When he that, right? So that's why it was okay. It wasn't just that he wanted the vine, it's that he did it in a way that damaged the rest of the plant. However, if you do it in a way that is productive for the plant, then that is a problem, even if your intention was to take off what you're removing and not to help what is still connected to the ground. That is Tosfot and Shabbos. Then there's actually a distinction here. So Tosfot in Shabbos simply says that. Tosfos in Sanhedrin goes further and makes a distinction and says that, and the Mepharshim say, if it was really so bad, then why was Rish Lakish even suspecting this person? Right? Why is Rish Lakish going crazy? How could you do Zemira during Shemitah if it was clear that what the guy was doing was horrible for the plant? So Tosfos in Sanhedrin say, it's not just that, that on Shemitah, it's going to be a problem only if on the whole, if the net value was productive, meaning if what you did was ultimately more productive for the plant, so that is a problem. If it was destructive for the plant, then that will not be a problem. However, on Shabbos, and that's what the Achronim say, remember for Salvechik, since Melechas Machsheves Asra Torah, if what you did is in some way productive, meaning you removed a branch from the tree, now that was bad for the tree, but in a sense, it was good for the tree because ultimately the tree was inhibiting, the branch was inhibiting it in some way. But the point is, if you take your shears and just start cutting branches off trees, it's not really the way to do it. But maybe in some sense, it will be helpful because the nutrients are more spread more evenly now. On Shabbos, that's a problem because we look at each act individually. That's what Tosfos says. Nachman Shabbos. Either way, the point is, Tosfos says, I don't care about Kavana Zimor. However, that is not the simple explanation. Most Mepharshim say that we do care about it, also based on a number of Mishnayot and Shviyos, which discuss how you can indeed trim your trees in various ways during Shemitah, and you may have to do a bit of a Shinoi. But the reason you can, says the Rambam and all his Mishnayot, is because you don't have Kavana for Zimor. You don't have, your intention isn't to trim the tree, it's just to remove and take whatever you're removing from the tree, right? You want the branch, you want the fruit, whatever it is. That's why it's okay. And the question is, why does Kavana matter during Shemitah, according to these Mepharshim? So we gave, if you remember, three different explanations. The first is Zomer specific, or I guess you could say the first two are, which is the Chazonish. The Chazonish says that if I take my shears and indiscriminately start cutting off branches from a tree, that's not zomer, because that's not really pruning. Pruning means with kivun. There's a specific way, a targeted way of doing it. If you just indiscriminately cut stuff off the tree, that's not zomer. That's why kavana matters. Kavana matters because otherwise you're not going to do it appropriately. So that's how he explains, and this could also explain why it's not a psik reisha problem. Sig Reishe isn't the issue. The issue is that you're doing it right. That's what the Chazon Ish says. Zomer requires a certain amount of precision. You could say more globally that it has to be Melechem Machshaveh. Maybe we disagree with Tosfos. Tosfos is the opinion that we don't care about Melechem Machshaveh in Shemitah. That's why Melacha Sheina Tzriach Lagufa is Chayev. Even though your purpose of pruning is not for the tree itself, it doesn't matter, it's still pruning. However, Rashi does seem to compare Shabbos to Shviyas in terms of what's a Nab and what's a Toldah, so potentially you could argue that you do require Melacha Machshaveh during Shemitah. However, the last thing we suggested was that maybe this relates to what we started with, which is that it's only prohibited if you do it Kederech Ha violin, only if you do it in a way that demonstrates that you're the owner of the field, like the owner of the field would do it. And this is, as we mentioned before, but Rav Steinberg develops this in a long memory he has on this topic. Again, he also mentions the case of training the animal, where since your intention isn't to actually plow, you're not plowing the way the owner of the field would, and therefore it's not usher. So too, he suggests, if you do Zomer Balik Havana, that's not the way that if you have a garden, you're not going to start indiscriminately cutting things off from the plants. That doesn't demonstrate ownership. That's not Derech Bailim. Derech Bailim is with Havana, and therefore without Havana, it's simply not Zomer. Halachically, Kaczynski suggests that if your attention is not for it to and benefit the growth of the plant, but rather to remove what you're removing from the tree, that is not Zomer. However, according to some mefarshim, you should do it with the Shinoi, and therefore that is advisable. And so today we reviewed the notion of relinquishing ownership from the land and produce during Shemitah and its ramifications on all the Malacha of Shemitah, the Malacha of Noteah, whether it's Zoraisa, Derabanan, and why, and the Malacha of Zomer. I'll leave you, since we have 2 minutes, with a brief note, which is that today, as Asar B'Teves, one of the things we talked about during Slichos this morning is the fact that today was, or at least, I forget, is it the 9th maybe, that the Torah was translated into Greek. And therefore, it is one of the reasons that we fast during this time period. Now, Rafutner develops at length that the depth of taking the Torah and translating, which on one hand is a good thing, right? Because this makes it more accessible to the nations of the world, and thereby they can benefit from the wisdom of Torah. However, it does take away from the unique connection that we have to the Torah. And if the Torah is meant to be a brit, a covenant between B'nai Yisrael and Hashem, so every covenant is also exclusive, and there have to be people that are included in the covenant and excluded from the covenant. And therefore, says Rav Huttner, that the main basis of our covenant with God is actually the Torah Sheba'al Peh. As the Gemara says, Ki al pi ha'dvarim aleila karati edcha bris in Yisrael, that via the Torah Sheba'al Peh, that is our unique covenant with God. That will always, or at least is meant to solely be for the Jewish people and God. And so when we engage in the analysis of Torah and the back and forth and the questions and the answers and the defining of Torah Sheba'al Peh, that is what maintains our unique connection to Torah, our unique relationship with God based on the Torah. And hopefully in this vein, and if we engage in the study and analysis and hold on to the Torah and our connection with God, soon the Sar B'Tevas will no longer be a fast day. Wish everyone a wonderful fast, an easy and meaningful fast, a wonderful Shabbos. Thank you for joining. Good Shabbos.
Yeah, Shabbos.